and welcome to Canucks Talk. I'm Thomas Drance. The people have spoken. The votes have been counted. And it's me, all alone again for 2 hours. So that's the show today. Jamie Dodd, in brackets, illness remains day-to-day. Hopefully we'll get him back shortly. We've got a great show for you today. First of all, momentarily, I will welcome the legend, Don Taylor, and my favorite frenemy, Rick Dhaliwal, onto the program for the weekly crossover segment. A three-man crossover this week with Jamie Dodd on the shelf. After that, we're going to do an AMA, an Ask Me Anything open segment. In segment two, producer Lena's going to help me dig into the mailbag and get to whatever pressing Vancouver Canucks questions you, our dear listeners, happen to have. Then, in the second hour, we're going to have Jason Buchla, and we'll close it off with the whiteboard in the final segment, as we do every Wednesday. Of course, I'm coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec is Canada's favorite orthotics provider. It's powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? And of course, you can reach us using the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line. And as usual on programs where I am by my lonesome on the air, your contributions to the show will keep this two-hour program moving. So please send in your thoughts, send in your questions. We'll get to as many as we can over the course of our program. And of course, the 650-650 text line is brought to you by Dunbar Lumber. In fact, it's called the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at DunbarLumber.com. All right, so let's start by talking about last night. The huge Canucks win in South California, Southern California, SoCal, as the kids call it. It was, without question, and by some degree of space between the second closest competitor, Vancouver's most complete effort of the season. And it's not just that they scored five goals and lit up a goaltender in Lucas Dostal, who's been standing on his head all season. It wasn't just that after falling behind early, the Canucks put the boot in to an inferior squad and completely skated them off the ice. It was also in how little the Ducks generated throughout the game. Like, this was truly a game played in the Anaheim end of the rink. A game in which if the Ducks, after the first 10 minutes for sure, the Ducks never got into Vancouver's end of the rink with space and almost never really threatened in terms of the quality of their chances. Now, Vancouver's won, you know, by more than a goal in other games this season. 6-3 against Anaheim, against Chicago in Chicago, for example. But in that game, Lankinen had to be great. Like, Kevin Lankinen had to stand on his head. Kevin Lankinen was good last night. I'm taking nothing away from a player who's really distinguished himself for the Canucks in the early going this season. His save percentage is up to .923. He hasn't failed to record a point across any of his eight starts this season. I mean, truly ridiculous stuff that we're seeing from Lankinen. So this isn't to take anything away from him. It's just that last night was probably the chillest outing that he's had all year long. The defensive game in front of him, clean enough to eat off of. And this matters because, look, the Canucks didn't have a clean defensive game against the Sharks. We talked about it. Rick Tocchet talked about it. I promise you, he still sees that Fabian Zetterlund whiff as time expired and the breakdown that caused it, you know, in his sleep. Certainly, we know that the Canucks' defensive game was not up to snuff against the New Jersey Devils. We know it wasn't up to snuff against the Carolina Hurricanes. Like, it had been a while in which Vancouver's defensive form, 5-on-5, had been appearing to sort of fall off. So to have a bounce-back performance, a game that dominant from a two-way perspective where the Canucks were that successful limiting what the Ducks were able to generate, that is a very good sign. Also a very good sign, when I look up at my monitor and see my two friends, Rick Dhaliwal and Don Taylor, appear as if by magic, the magic of, well, TikTok and internet television. Let's bring them on board. Let's bring them onto the program. We've got the Donnie and Dolly team or I guess they're the team, Donnie and Dolly, whatever. My good friends, Don and Rick, have joined me. How are you guys doing today?
Really good, Thomas.
Outstanding. Outstanding, yeah. Thomas. Big Canuck win last night against the powerful Anaheim Ducks.
Yeah, I mean, look, the caliber of the opponent is low. And what's kind of frustrating about watching the Ducks, to be totally honest with you, gentlemen, is it's not just that they're like an they don't play hockey like your classic, like, immature young team. Instead, they just play extremely conservative hockey. Like, they barely seem to have the puck in Vancouver's end of the rink.
Yep.
How did you sort of rate what Vancouver was able to accomplish defensively last night?
Well, I say this a lot because I've been around for a long time. And one goal against, and again, Lankanen continues to impress, even though it was against the lowly Ducks. But I say this a lot. Games like that are games that they used to lose.
Yep.
Where you're supposed to, you've got a very good team, you're supposed to win, and you come up flat. Same goes with the San Jose game the other day. I think it's a good sign, a positive sign. Does it mean they're going to win the Cup? No. But it's a positive sign when they show enough character to not only win a game like that, but to win it convincingly. So maybe that's coming from somebody who's been around a while and knows what the history, the dark history of the Canucks can be like. So I liked what they were up to last night.
Thomas, when you play a weak team, you don't want your team, and this is back-to-back, not strong teams, and you don't want to habits picking up, bad ones. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone wants to get in on the point parade and forget about, you know, your defensive assignments. You don't want bad habits. And I think if Rick Tocchet, hey, they're 6-2-3 right now, guys. I know everyone's picking away at them and saying they're not as good as last year, but a 6-2-3 is a pretty impressive record any way you cut it. They're still third in their division. I know Calgary won last night. Montreal got the extra point. But you know what? They haven't had a lot of stiff competition. I'm not worried about the Anaheims and the San Jose's of the world. A little bit tougher this week to wrap up the week, Thomas. You got the Kings. They're a little bit tougher on home ice. You know that. And the Oilers are going to be coming in on Saturday.
With McDavid.
And I don't think we knew that was going to happen. I think when McDavid went down in Columbus last Monday, everybody thought 2 or 3 weeks. And everybody, I bet you a ton of Canuck fans probably offloaded their tickets.
Yeah.
Knowing that, you know, McDavid might not play Saturday. And here we go. He's going to play tonight. Never mind Saturday. The video of him at practice today at the game day skate was incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, he doesn't look like, you know, there's anything wrong with him if you go by the video at the game day skate for Edmonton today. So he's going to be in town. And the Rangers are going to be in town at the end of the month, which is another big one. They do have a soft schedule. They have had not had, you know, a lot of back-to-backs or the long road trip. They had the long road trip. But the schedule opponents has been pretty easy. And this is where you got to collect those points, because it wasn't many years ago. It wasn't when they weren't collecting these points against these bad teams, because they themselves were a bad team as well. So anyways, I think Rick Tocchet has to be happy with the last 2-3 games. He's been preaching play without the puck. He's been preaching, you know, box out in front of the net, all that stuff he loves. He loves the goals against to be down. So I think he's got to be happy with the last two games.
And then the other thing from last night, Thomas, as you know, Quinn Hughes in the three assists and becoming the third fastest NHL defenseman to 300 assists.
How did he beat
career.
Paul Coffey
our
there?
Full question today. Yeah, very good question.
Isn't that wild?
When you consider Coffey's surrounding cast.
And, no kidding.
You know, Gary Suter was on the list as well. He was the surprise there. But Brian Leetch second, Bobby Orr first all time. Our poll question today was, is Quinn Hughes, you know, the greatest player in Canucks history? Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we first thought of that question, it was like, you know, is this too early? And then we thought, okay, he's been here for parts of 7 seasons, and the other guy that you might throw in that group, or the other one who would compete with him, is Pavel Bure. They're pretty close.
Yeah.
Yep.
Pavel Bure was here for parts of 7 seasons as well. It just that it seems like just yesterday that Hughes got here. What a player he is.
He is special. Just want to quickly note, Rick, and please forgive me for this. Canucks are second in the Pacific by point percentage.
Here we go again. You and your point percentage. Here we go again.
It's the only fair way to do it in season, bud. You think I'm only bringing it up when it dings the Canucks? Come on. Anyway.
No, I know. But last year you brought it up.
I know. But if in a different context. Quinn Hughes, okay? I don't care what the production looks like. I don't care that he's however many points he is back of Cale Makar. The impact that this guy is making right now, there's like six or seven skaters on the planet who are in this tier in terms of being an individual that can carry their team as a skater to wins on an every night basis. And by the way, he's the only one of those players who's a defenseman, right? Like there's one goalie, he's the guy who plays for New York. There's one defenseman, he's the guy who plays for Vancouver. Mm. And the rest of them are Kucherov and McDavid and, you know, a who's who of Hart Trophy. Like that's the level he's playing at right now. It is incredible, and I hope that, you know, the national media that absolutely did not, especially on U.S. election night, watch the Canucks torch the Ducks and watch Quinn Hughes just have that game on a string. Like, I hope they watch closely enough to understand what's happening out here, because this guy's ascended to a completely different plane. He is better this year than he was last season when he won the Norris.
Absolutely. Well, and he's obviously, and you know this, obviously his shot has improved, and he's talked about that. The other thing, Thomas, I think that when you watch the games, other teams, the opponents, they're on to him in terms of what he's going to do. You know, the moves he makes side to side, the passes that just across the blue line. They know what's coming, and they still can't stop him. And that's what the great players do. He knows what they're going to try to do to stop him, and he still excels. It's just it's just really special. And you know, I know Rick, we say this we said this when it comes to Pavel Bure, you know, Doug Flutie when he was playing for the BC Lions. Yep. Enjoy this guy while he's here.
Yeah,
like I don't know what the end's going to look like. It seems like he's going to be here for a long, long time. But just enjoy him, because look how long it took to get a defenseman like that in the city over 50 years. It's just really, really special right now.
Thomas, the way he controls the play, the tempo, the puck's always on a stick. Thomas, you're more of a stats geek than I am, but do they have a stat for who's got the puck on their stick the longest during a game?
They do.
I think he'd be up.
They do, and he leads by it. Like it's Quinn Hughes and it's everybody
else.
There
you go.
It's like he's playing a different sport sometimes.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always on a stick. And Donnie's talking about pre-scouts. Don't you think every team does a pre-scout on Quinn Hughes on how, you know, to control this guy, stabilize him, and yet every game he's got no one can take the puck off his stick?
Well, the other thing, too, knock on wood for Canuck fans and the Canucks themselves, but when's the last time he took, and help me out here, and maybe, you know, I'm old, I don't know what my memory's like these days. I don't remember what my memory's like. Last time he took a big hit. He's got the puck all the time. Yeah, and how often have we seen him get flattened, you know, over the course of seven seasons?
Yeah,
it hasn't happened all that often.
It hasn't happened all that often.
Catch him first.
It hasn't happened all that often, but one thing we did see, right, was we saw it happen like four times on a single shift against Nashville, for example, in the playoffs, right?
Against Nashville, okay. Thanks to Kiefer Sherwood.
Kiefer Sherwood with McCarron. Yeah, they got to them early and often. And I think they did a really good job of that, especially the Sherwood, you know, line did an awesome job of that in that playoff series. And so I think that's sort of where we're at now with Quinn. Like, one thing that I'm really interested to watch over the course of the season is, you know, he can have 80 points or he can have 100 points, and it kind of doesn't matter. Yeah. We know what level he's at. He's at such a special level, and I just think to break through and have people appreciate, not people in this market, Vancouver knows what's going on, but the people who don't watch him play more than 10 times a year or what have you, to really have them understand it, I think the Four Nations and being at his best in the playoffs, because it's not that he was poor in the playoffs, but, you know, Edmonton writers will say stuff like Evan Bouchard outplayed him, right? And it's like, you swap Quinn Hughes and Evan Bouchard in that series, and it's a four-gamer. So don't even pretend that there's a comparison here, right? The point being that doing this on the big stage, right, and he's going to have multiple opportunities this season, that's the next layer. That's the next level, and I'm really excited to see it play out over the course of this year.
Yeah, you talked about the national coverage. I everybody was bouncing around last night between the hockey game and the election and, you know, various sportscasts. But we had a few people in our Delaney's OK Taryn Langley inbox Again, I hope I can say that.
Too late.
But oh, they've made the
right.
point that
650,
when they,
650,
when they watch
whatever.
The national, there you go. When they watch the national telecast, the national mm-hmm. broadcast, it was all about the Leafs beating the Bruins, and the Hughes accomplishment wasn't even mentioned.
If that was a Maple Leafs defenseman who did what Hughes did last night, there would have been 25 minutes off the top of their sportscast, on the Maple Leafs defenseman. Like, let's say Quinn Hughes was in Toronto and he did that. 25 minutes nonstop on that. But because it's in Vancouver, but I mean, we've been arguing about this for the last 30 years. It's not going to change.
More than that. But Thomas makes the point, too. Like, he beat Paul Coffey.
Oh,
like,
Paul
are
Coffey.
Are you kidding me? And then he's being mentioned in the same breath as Coffey, Leach, and especially
Bobby Orr.
Like, in the same breath.
And gentlemen.
Enjoy it.
And gentlemen, let's be real. All of those defensemen, they were passing to shooters who, A, could score without lifting the puck, and B, were shooting on goaltenders who didn't even know how to do the butterfly, were often 5'9", and regularly smoked a half pack of cigarettes at intermission. I mean, it's a little bit different to pick up an assist today.
That's low.
That was an off
coffee.
Night.
Yeah. And Thomas, we got to see a lot of Paul Coffey in the Smythe division back in the day, and he's pushing the puck up to Curry, Anderson, Messier, Gretzky. I mean, he was fun to watch. I mean, Paul Coffey was fast. He was the best skater in the league by a country mile. And
he had Charlie Huddy helping him out.
Charlie Huddy.
Hanging back defensively.
Charlie Huddy was the Chris Tanev back then. But, Paul Coffey was a
Thomas
treat.
Has no idea who we're talking about here.
Paul Coffey was absolutely the best to watch. He was just so phenomenal.
Or wasn't bad.
And so was Orr, obviously. But for Quinn, he used to be named in a group of guys like Coffey and Orr. Wow.
Yeah, it's ridiculous what we're seeing out of Quinn. 13-4, by the way, is how much the Canucks have outscored their opponents when Quinn Hughes is on the ice. In all other minutes, Vancouver has been outscored 14-18. So 18-14, the edge for everybody else. So pretty difficult to make a larger impact on what a team's performance is than this one individual who wears the C on his crest for Vancouver is through 11 games this season. Canucks will practice at Crypto.com Arena shortly, Rick. Is there a chance that we're going to see Thatcher Demko rejoin the group for practice?
Yeah, so Demko, I'm not sure if he's going to be there today. I'm just still a couple of hurdles to pass before he practices with the team. I'm just it's up in the air. One thing I'll say about this Demko injury is that the rehab has not been a straight line, Thomas. It's been, it's been gone. We've gone left, we've gone right, we've gone backwards, we've gone forwards. It's a very tough read. I know things pop up from national media guys, and this week we were told that Demko is going to, practice. But I've been told that, look, before he practices full out with the Canucks, he still has to pass a couple of hurdles. Maybe he passed those hurdles yesterday or this morning. I don't know, but I'm just hearing that still a couple of hurdles to pass before he can practice with the Canucks. But there is good progress, Thomas, with Demko. It is near the end. We are getting there. But I don't know if he's going to be practicing with the Canucks today. Someone told me this morning he didn't think he was going to. But we'll find out here in about 40, 45 minutes. But, whether he practices today or not, I can tell you that last 2 weeks have been really good movement in the right direction. But that's the best we can, say so far.
I think everyone is just excited to see this guy get back to stopping pucks, to sustain the injury like he did toward the end of a career season with the team finally finding its stride, and then to not be able to perform in the playoffs with that team, and now to have this level of uncertainty lingering sort of above his head. I mean, obviously a frustrating process. An opaque one from the outside looking in, but I think it'll be a huge boost to this team. Whether or not he's like the number one workhorse guy right off the bat, or whether he has to be eased into it just to get him back, right?
Well, yeah, and here's the other thing too. Lankinen has been so good, and it seems like it's sustainable. He's just plays such a quietly effective game. Mm-hmm. It seems like it's sustainable there. So if Demko does come back, and you just said it there, you know, is he going to play a lot again or not? Whatever the case may be, it seems like part of the silver lining here, if you can say there even is one, is that it seems like they've got somebody who can play a significant amount of games in order to rest Thatcher Demko and keep him healthy for crunch time, which wasn't the case last year.
The other thing about Lankinen, guys, is because he's a UFA, he's got a lot to play for, too. Mm. You know, whether he hits that free agent market or maybe he's playing so well at the trade deadline, maybe a team says to Vancouver, hey, is Lankinen available? But what he's doing right now, Lankinen, he's showcasing himself for around the league, too, because he's a UFA. I'm sorry. You know, did he want to sign a one-year deal? Did he want to sign under $1 million? No. The goalie market changed. His agent was told that we got to make a trade. And, you know, there were some LTIR situations they were waiting on before they could get a shot at Lankinen. And that's why he kind of went into September and not in July and August. Like, clearly, Thomas, when you look at Lankinen, he should have been signed in July or August. But teams were capped out, and teams told his agent that we got to make a trade. And we're waiting on LTIR stuff before we can go get your guy. But I have to be honest with you. He's showcasing himself to the rest of the National Hockey League right now. Because if he ends up on July 1st next year, guys, I guarantee you he will not be signed in September. He'll be signed in July.
Yeah, it's not just that. It's fair to wonder where the Canucks would be without Lankinen, given how much stability he's brought to the blue paint for them in the first month and change of the season. But also, you know, the injury Demko's coming back from by his own admission, right? Completely unprecedented. We don't know if there will be a performance impact, right? That he has to work through. We don't know sort of what a return to performance protocol needs to be followed in terms of workload. We don't know what sort of re-injury risk it comes attached to. And, you know, it's not like an ACL or an MCL where we have examples and we've seen what this looks like before, right? So we kind of have some expectations. You know, it's not just where would this club be without Lankinen. I mean, it's vital to have this type of stability even after, and maybe even especially after, Demko comes back. One last question for you about the goaltending, Rick. The club's plan when they originally signed Lankinen was to carry three goaltenders. Like, that was plan A, was we're going to try to carry three goaltenders. Is the logic there likely to flip, given how Shelovs has performed in his three appearances to this point in the campaign?
Absolutely. So if Demko comes back, why would you keep Shelovs now? Because how are you going to keep his confidence up? He needs to go down to Abbotsford and play a ton, you know, and turn his game around. But, you know, here's the other thing, guys. Ian Clark is not based out of Vancouver.
Florida, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's right. And so he's not based out of Vancouver. He's a guy that you can't even he can't even show up and say, I'll go work with the Abbotsford goaltenders or Vancouver goalies. Like, he's not even based out of Vancouver. I would like for Ian Clark to work with Shelovs in Abbotsford. I mean, wouldn't you, Thomas? You know, and help turn around.
Is that in the new job description, Rick? Is that in the new job description?
Well, the new job description is a goalie scout, right? So that's a position they gave him. So he's not even based out of Vancouver. But I look, Shelovs needs to get down to Abbotsford. He needs to play a ton of games and Justin Pogge, the goaltending coach down there, to get his hands on him and help turn him around.
No kidding.
Gentlemen, a subdued crossover. I always say whenever we lack Jamie, I feel like the crossover is not low energy, but just like it's more on the rails. We're more focused. Despite what everyone would think, it's actually Jamie that seems to be the agitator of our little group.
Well, I think the chair and your backpack are doing a great job. Why do we have a shot of them there? I don't understand.
Why do you got your backpack on his seat?
I don't know. I didn't know where else to put it. But
I
you know what?
Keep
I
should have there. It's fun.
I should have removed it before before the segment. A little sloppy on my end.
What hat are you wearing?
Blank.
It looks like a po' boy.
It's blank. Yeah.
So you got a blank?
What's a baseball hat?
It's a blank. Yeah. Nothing on there? Nothing?
Nothing, no.
Wow.
It's you know what? It's a habit that I picked up actually while working PR. I didn't want to wear another team's logo, when I was like traveling with the team. Yeah. So I started buying blank hats.
Probably a good idea.
Yeah. So I didn't want to. So I didn't want to. So I just started wearing blank hats, and then I decided, you know what, I actually quite like these. So I only wear, or you not.
It
only,
goes with everything.
Yeah, it goes with everything. It looks adult for a baseball cap.
Ooh. You need a dog.
We need to look adult. We should get a couple. I can't find one to fit my head.
Yeah, I mean, you know what?
You need a Donnie and Dolly hat.
I do need a Donnie and Dolly hat, size 8, please. Something that would fit Don Taylor.
Oh.
Well, we don't have that size, I'll tell you that much.
I think you've got me beat there, Thomas.
You got the biggest head in the market, believe me.
Yeah, a big melon, no question. Gentlemen, thank you so much. Be well. We'll see you next week. Nope.
Thanks, Thomas. Thanks, buddy.
That's been the crossover. We'll be back for an Ask Me Anything Mailbag Wednesday. Producer Lena is going to pick through the best responses. So use the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line and get at me with whatever burning Canucks queries happen to be residing at the top of your head at the moment. Be back soon. You're listening to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. That is disturbing. Truly.
Dom's, I told them not to do it.
Dom's Euro Beats featuring Jamie's Moan. Horrifying. Okay, it's pretty good. All right. Please turn it off before I never sleep through the evening again. Holy cow. All right, well, we're back. It's Canucks Talk, featuring your host, Thomas Drance. Jamie Dodd is day-to-day with what we are going to imagine is embarrassment. we're going to do an open segment here. You've been submitting your questions to the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line. If you haven't got your question in yet, please do not fret or imagine that you're too late. Simply text us now. And you'll still have a chance to have your query asked over the course of this segment. I'm going to hand it over to our producer, Lena. Lena is going to stick her mitts into the mailbag and pick out the very best questions that we've been asked. Lena, what do we have that's good so far?
All right. We're going to go in with a trade question.
Okay.
Chase, friend of the barber, texted in, Thomas, what would be your realistic trade targets for the Canucks come trade deadline?
Yeah, so this one's interesting to me because there's not a lot of teams that I think would be truly making peace with their fate just yet. I mean, think about it this way. The Vancouver Canucks are second in the Pacific Division by point percentage, and the San Jose Sharks are last. And the real difference between them in points is 5, although the Canucks have 3 games in hand, right? I mean, it's not enough of a gap yet. It's still too early. So you've got Barry Trotz-style general managers who are saying things like, hey, if we don't turn it around, I might have to push the rebuild button. So you've got teams that are at least willing to think about it or even openly talk about it. But I don't think we're at the point yet where, you know, we're not sort of at the point yet where teams will be truly ready in any meaningful sense to throw in the towel. However, that's not to duck your question or squirrel the subject, as it were. There's all sorts of sort of basic assumptions that we can make about the quality of various teams. And so let's do so. Let's look through and think about what teams probably will sell or at least consider it. Now, you know, the Philadelphia Flyers have been making future-oriented moves throughout Danny Briere, general manager Danny Briere's tenure. They have 9 points in 13 games. That's a team that I think we might look at as a potential seller as an example. And, you know, there are some interesting potential pieces up and down that lineup. I mean, you've got some expiring guys that would certainly, you know, tweak people's interest or pique people's interest, excuse me. And you've got some guys with maybe a little more term, guys like Scott Laughton, right? Center Now, he's a lefty, so that's not ideal. I do think realistically what you're looking for is a right-handed centerman or a veteran defender. You know, Eric Johnson on the Philadelphia Flyers. I mean, he's big. He's got Stanley Cup winning experience. He's right-handed. So maybe, but that's a lower end sort of acquisition. The Chicago Blackhawks, you know, the Canucks and the Chicago Blackhawks have made a high number of trades, like a high volume of transactions between Kyle Davidson, their general manager, and general manager Patrick Alvin. There's a close relationship there. And, you know, the Blackhawks are kind of interesting because they've loaded up on some of that like veteran talent to kind of plug the gaps in their organization in terms of just like credible NHL level players. And so whether it's Taylor Hall or Andreas Athanasiou, Ryan Donato, Pat Maroon, a Stanley Cup winner, Craig Smith, I mean, there's a ton of forwards that would sort of meet the description of a quality rental targets, but there's not really defensemen. You're kind of looking at Alec Martinez as their key expiring guy. Connor Murphy has a couple years left, but as good a fit as he'd be, I think you're looking at a pretty expensive potential piece there. You know, then you're sort of looking at like your Montreal, your Buffalo Sabres, maybe. But man, if the Sabres are at all in the mix, you know they're going to try and go for it, right? It's tough. Like, it's just there aren't a lot of options that stand out to me, in part because I just think it's a little too early for teams to be truly and properly pulling the chute in any meaningful sense. You know, so with all of that said, I mean, there's a few guys like Alec Martinez would stand out to me among this list of pending UFAs. I mean, it's tough. It's tough. I think what you're probably more likely looking for, if you really want to address what this team needs defensively, is more like a Hronek-style swing, probably something bigger. Probably, like, you know, even Ivan Provorov, right, who would be sort of the marquee name just based on age and overall utility among sort of the group of pending unrestricted free agent defensemen. Like, even him, if Columbus is hanging around, they're going to go for it too. That organization is desperate for a feel good story, and they've played pretty good hockey with a pretty young core to this point in the season. It's a first year general manager, a first year head coach. Like, they're going to give that group a shot. They're not going to be a motivated seller unless they're well and truly out of it by the time the deadline comes along. So I think what you're probably more likely to have to do in the Canucks shoes is look at some of those guys who have term left. You're hoping that the Calgary Flames fall out of it and you get a chance to bid on Rasmus Anderson, but that's going to be hugely expensive. You're hopeful that St. Louis falls out of it and you get a chance to bid on a Colton Parayko. But that's going to be wildly expensive and comes with massive risk given the term remaining on his contract at the age of 31. So, yeah, I mean, honestly, this is one thing that I think has been interesting about some of the reporting and some of the, you know, Canucks fly fishing for defensive help. They're looking around and, you know, the Canucks will tell you, like, they'll tell you this. If there was a top four defenseman around that we could acquire, like, we'd have done it. We'd have done it yesterday. It's going to be a very hard market and it's going to be extremely expensive. And I think the list of available players to this point anyway strikes me as pretty minimal. Like, it's going to be very tough. There is not a long list of defenders that I think the Canucks could target that would really represent a meaningful upgrade at this point among those pending unrestricted players. You're really more loaded with names like, man, it's bad. I'm not gonna lie to you, it's bad. You're more looking at your, you know, Hayden Fleury type reclamation projects or, you know, Josh Mahura type depth guys. It's lean out there in terms of defensive options for teams in the NHL at the moment. Lena, what's next?
All right, we're getting a lot of Kevin Lankinen questions coming in, so I'm kind of just going to mold them all and ask it to you in one big question.
Sounds good.
One of them was, have you ever seen a backup goalie getting traded? And B, that's A. B, what could the Canucks essentially get if he continues to perform well in a trade?
Well, so there is an element to which teams are like pretty reluctant, it seems, to acquire big time goaltenders in season, right? The Ryan Miller example stands out to me. We just haven't seen a lot of teams try to address goaltending at the trade deadline. And at least when we have seen it, it hasn't necessarily been successful. You know, goaltenders carry some value, but their market is tricky. It's crunchy. Just generally speaking, the truth of the matter is that even star goaltenders don't tend to net the sorts of returns that you'd expect. As just a general rule, you do see, you know, some sort of mid-range type deals for goaltenders. But, you know, think about Linus Ullmark. He got a first. He got a forward and Mark Kostetic, who's been excellent for the Bruins in a fourth line role. And he got Jonas Korpisalo on a bad contract. Like, that was the Linus Ullmark return, and that was an offseason deal. The Devils paid a first for Jacob Markstrom, but certainly we're not talking about anything like that when it comes to Kevin Lankinen. And I, you know what? Honestly, I think you're probably looking at maximum a mid-round pick, but I don't see why the Canucks would do this. Like, why would they trade Kevin Lankinen? The market's not going to be significant. The haul is not going to be nearly sufficient to even provide you with the sort of capital you need to, like, you know, like the Canucks did this with Beauvillier and Zadorov last year, where they flipped Beauvillier to the Chicago Blackhawks for a fifth, and then took that fifth, bundled it with a third, and traded for Nikita Zadorov. So all in, it was a third round pick for Nikita Zadorov, but you got the extra ammunition you needed to win the bidding from a separate deal with the Chicago Blackhawks. Okay, so is there a world where, say, the Canucks are looking for their answer to the Timothy Liljegren trade, right? So you're looking at a third, a sixth, and a, you know, a Guillaume Brisebois type defenseman to make the math work. Even if you're getting the third or the sixth for Lankinen and sort of eating into the acquisition cost that you're paying to bring in that defensive upgrade, like, even if you're doing all of that, which, sure, it's not the worst business, but aren't you taking a massive risk? I mean, Demko's return to play has already been stilted and frustrating, as Rick Dhaliwal said on the last segment. It's been up and down and left and right. It hasn't exactly been linear. He's dealing with a wildly unpredictable injury. As I keep reiterating, right, we don't know what the re-injury risk associated with returning to play from a popliteus tear looks like. We don't know what sort of workload Demko will be able to handle and for how long it'll take him to ramp up to be a workhorse starter in the NHL, if he ever is again. You know, and I'm not saying he won't be. I'm just saying, I don't know. We've never seen a player, and we've never seen an NHL goaltender attempt to come back from this injury. And then there's the re-injury risk side of this, right? When you're talking about things like hamstring injuries, or talking about, you know, players coming back from MCLs or high ankle sprains, on and on, right? Some injuries come with a higher associated risk for re-injury in the short, medium, or even long term, as compensation injuries are often a huge factor. Like, we don't know what that looks like. And this is not me trying to sort of shade this negatively in any way, shape, form, or otherwise. This is just, let's admit what we don't know. And not just us admit it, but the teams admitted it. Demko's admitted it, right? Like, science doesn't have the answers for these questions. So why would you lose Lankinen, given how essential he's been to what this Canucks team has accomplished through, you know, 11 games this season? Like, they can't. You need to have Lankinen in the fold. Even if Demko comes back and looks great and, you know, meets like a 99th percentile possible sort of timeline in terms of how quickly he ramps up and is able to resume, you know, playing at a 60 game a year pace or whatever the Canucks target is, you need Lankinen. We saw it last year in the playoffs. Canucks are playing Shelovs and DeSmith in one playoff series. And by the time you get to the spring, like, it's not enough to have one goaltender, and the Canucks don't have enough goalie depth organizationally, especially given how Shelovs has started the season, especially given the fact that Jiří Patera and Nikita Tolopilo have sort of gotten out of the gates slowly to begin the year. Like, there's no world in which the Canucks should feel comfortable moving Kevin Lankinen, and there's absolutely no world where the return would justify eating into your goaltending depth this season. Lena, what's that next?
All right, this is from Graham in Kelowna.
Mm-hmm.
If the Canucks only get stronger as the year goes on due to Demko return, Joshua return, and Petey returning to form, would you rather upgrade the top 4D at the expense of Vilander or the top 6 forwards at the expense of Lekkerimäki at the deadline?
Well, look, I mean, I think the top 4D is the far greater need. I mean, I look at this Canucks forward group and I like an awful lot of what I see. And that's, you know, even without Joshua in the mix yet, that's even without Jake DeBrusk. I know he's scored in 2 consecutive games and looks to be perhaps finding his stride a little bit. But, you know, we haven't seen the sort of impact from DeBrusk that we will, I'm very confident, over the course of this season as a whole. You know, I think we're going to see better days from Elias Pettersson, and I think we're going to see better days from JT Miller. I don't think Vancouver's top 2 centermen have been, you know, firing off Hadoukens the way they usually do when they're either fully healthy or fully dialed in, or whether that when their confidence is fully going. And obviously, very different sort of things that we're seeing from both players. Pettersson's the lack of production, and you know the occasional like maddening indecisiveness on the ice with Miller. What we're seeing, I think, is just a little bit less physical assertiveness. I think operating somewhat below 100%. We're just not seeing him drive the way he certainly did last season when he leveled up as a two-way force for this team. We're still seeing the like assertive, willful, clutch, sort of big goal moments from Miller. But my point being, I don't think either of those guys, with again, Pettersson lagging pretty far behind in terms of a percentile of their performance that we've seen so far. Like, I don't think we've seen either player at their best. And for all of that, this Canucks forward group, more often than not, certainly last night, looks pretty imposing, pretty dynamic, pretty creative. The Hughes side of the equation, I think, the top 4 side of the equation is entirely different, where you've got Quinn Hughes absolutely playing out of his mind, making more impact on individual games than just about any other skater in hockey. And yet in those non-Quinn Hughes minutes, you know, you can outscore your opponents 13-4 with them, but you're being outscored 18-14 or whatever it is in the minutes where he's not playing. Look, I even think you could see it last night. As good as the Canucks played as a team, you had those, you know, 2 Carson Soucy penalties. Like, Carson Soucy was so reliable for this team last year, and I can't diagnose exactly what's going wrong for that pair, but it just feels like they're in one of those cycles you occasionally see veteran players get into where like they can't do anything right. And those end. And I still think Carson Soucy is a really reliable, sturdy defender. We know what Tyler Myers can do within this system when things are working. They haven't to this point. You know, they've brought in Brännström. He's been a revelation, and it's helped the team sort of stem the bleeding in those non-Hughes minutes, but there's still a lot of work to do there. So for me, you know, personally, I sort of think Lekkerimäki's a higher end prospect than Tom Vilander, but that wouldn't even factor into it. It would just be if you're trading a premium asset, you best be addressing your biggest area of need, and you better be addressing your biggest area of need long term, especially because, you know, Vilander's having a great season. And if he continues to trend this way over the course of the entire sophomore campaign at BU, I mean, he's going to be an option to be a partial answer himself by the end of the season. So you better be getting a no doubt about it, you know, game changing top 4 piece if you're doing that deal. Likewise, in the top 6, if you're considering trading Lekkerimäki, I wouldn't even bring in the evaluation of either prospect into the thing. It would just be like, if you're trading an asset that important, that valuable, you better be firing it at your area of greatest need. And that's clearly on defense. Lena, let's go one more before we get to the break.
All right. Thoughts on any other right-handed D named Rasmus? Rasmus Ristolainen?
Rasmus Ristolainen, yeah.
Feels like a Rick Tocchet type.
I mean, look, Ristolainen's had a much better season last year, but I think there are huge gaps in Ristolainen's defensive profile. I worry that you'd be paying a premium to just bring in a player you already basically have in Tyler Myers. Like, I just don't see a big difference between Rasmus Ristolainen and Tyler Myers. I think in both cases, you know, they're big physical D, and so people think of them as like defensive shutdown guys. But I actually think Myers plays with more physical edge more consistently than Ristolainen does. Ristolainen's maybe a little bit more skilled, but Both of them are effectively like, you know, I think like four fives ideally. They don't have huge impacts. They actually have some negative impacts defensively, and really they're more offensive defensemen in terms of the environment that they help create. And, you know, I'd add sort of right-handed defensemen that can be prone to the big mistake, especially if they start doing too much on the ice. Ristolainen would not be a piece that I think the Canucks should spend significantly on to bring in. Rasmus Anderson, to me, is a far more interesting fit given, well, the contract level, sort of the length remaining on that deal, right? Because with Ristolainen, we're talking about, when does he expire here? I'm just trying to check this out. See UFA. Anyway, he's a UFA. Oh, okay. So he's a UFA in 2 years. So same length of term. But a slightly more expensive, not as sharp defensively. I think his two-way IQ is lower. I think his offensive ceiling is comparable, but I prefer Anderson's just like savvy from an offensive standpoint as opposed to Ristolainen's like big shot and raw skills. So yeah, I just think you'd be paying a lot for a player that a player type that you already have. I think if the Canucks are spending on defense, what I want to see is a guy who can do a little bit more to help them in transition than Ristolainen can. And ideally, maybe he brings a level of two-way intelligence beyond what the Canucks currently have, you know, on the right side. I guess we have time for one more, Lena.
All right, I got a good one. Can Drancer please explain what in the world the fat part of the bell curve actually means? I have no clue. Keep up the great work. Love the show.
Yeah. Okay, so the fat part of the bell curve, a bell curve is a distribution, right? So the area of the curve where most of the population falls would be the fat part of the bell curve. It is literally sort of shaped like a parabola, although with sort of a gradient midway up. So when I'm talking about the fat part of the bell curve, I'm talking about the most likely types of outcomes, the range of outcomes where the highest probability or the highest concentration or the largest population sort of effectively resides. And then when you get out to the skinny parts, that's the more extreme outcomes. So for example, my fat part of the bell curve outcome for this Canucks team was, I think this Canucks team will have fewer points than they had last season, but might actually play better hockey. Not because I think they're not as good as they were last season. I think they have a shot to be better, but because things went so well for them from a health perspective, from a shooting percentage perspective, from a goaltending perspective, from just like a good fortune and vibes perspective last year, that I thought, hey, this team could be better than they were last season and will still struggle to recreate that level of success. I think we've kind of seen that play out across 11 games where, you know, there's a lot of nights where the Canucks look like they have a higher baseline than they did last season, but you're also seeing seams that you never did last season, in part because the Canucks were burying every opponent they faced, 5-1, 6-1, and so on and so forth. So that was one where, talking about the fat part of the bell curve, the most likely distribution of outcomes, I think has served us well in understanding what we've seen from the Canucks through 11 games. All right, that's the music. I'm being played off. This segment's gone too long, which means it's time for a break. We'll be back on the other side. Second hour of the program, we've got Jason Bukala on at 1 p.m., and then we'll open the whiteboard to close out today's show. You're listening You are listening to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650. Love it. A Motown rejoinder as we are off with the second hour of Canucks Talk today. I'm your host, Thomas Drantz, still flying solo. We've got Jason Bukes on the line shortly. We'll get to him. But first, reminding you that we are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? And of course, if you want to get at us, ask Books any questions, ask me any questions, use the 650-650 Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at DunbarLumber.com. All right, with that, let's bring him in. We have him every Wednesday on the program. It is former Director of Amateur Scouting for the Florida Panthers, longtime Nashville Predator scout as well, Sportsnet's very own Jason Buchla. Books, how are you, my friend?
Great, sir. I'm doing great. This just in.
Yeah.
Quinn Hughes is pretty good.
Yeah, so I actually think he's playing at a higher level than he did last season, Books, even though the goals and the production isn't quite there at the same outrageous caliber that it was last year. What do you think? Does anyone notice?
Probably not, because everybody, to the naked eye, it's all about points and things, but you can't help but notice how elite he is, for sure. I'm with you. I think he was on record at the beginning of the season just saying that he felt he had to train even a little bit more differently this offseason, like tweak some things around the fringes, if you will. And as he gets a little bit older, he's still only 25, but he's so much stronger physically now than he was when he entered the league, when he was coming out of Michigan, and he was doing great things there as well. But he's only got one hit in 11 games, and he doesn't have to hit anybody because his feet are so elite that he gets everywhere so fast that his retrievals are on time, and obviously his escapability is fantastic. So Canucks got to get the power play going more consistently.
Yeah.
But overall, I think that it's just fun to watch guys like him. We've talked about it before. You know, as a fan of the game, outside of what we do for a living, it's just nice. It's fun to go to the rink and watch guys like Hughes or, you know, the Makars of the world, or, you know, even obviously the Connor Bedards in a struggling Chicago market. But you get my drift. It's good for the game. It's fun.
Now, you know, because Quinn represents USA Hockey, right? Because he's, you know, if you look up his place of birth, it's Orlando. because he went to Michigan and spends his time there. I mean, we don't usually think of him as like a Toronto area player, Books, but that's where he was trained. Like, that's where he came up, is in the GTA sort of hockey milieu. Do you remember sort of him getting on your radar when you were on the circuit back in those days? Like, do you have any recollections of seeing, you know, the artist we now know as Quinn Hughes as a much younger player?
I didn't see him as young. You hear about him, right?
Yeah.
It's like when Sidney Crosby is coming along, or even Cale Makar when he was coming along, just because of, you know, he went to play in the AJ and stuff like that. So you start to hear about it more than anything. And then in my position, as you know, I got, as just a hockey guy, yeah, I was hearing. I've heard a lot about the dad, right? Because the dad was involved so much in player development, and obviously he was doing that at the minor hockey level, and then he worked with the Leafs.
Yep.
In the same role for a time before he's transitioned into the agency business now. But the whole Hughes family, the family as a whole, all three, it was hard not to hear about them as they were trending towards their going right now. We were talking about it last week when I was in the studio. We were watching the Jersey game after they laid the boots to Vancouver. Remember last week we talked? At the end of our conversation last week, I said to you, they better be ready to start on time against this New Jersey team because it's going to be a track meet and they'll come at you hard early. And they did, obviously, and they've clearly hopefully learned something from that. But anyways, I digress. I mean, it's interesting to see the all three of the brothers, like how their size and their stature, and you know how obviously Jack Jack, the defenseman, right?
Jeez. No, Luke is the defenseman.
Luke's the 6'2" defenseman. Yeah. I'll be all right. it's amazing how he's a bigger guy and compared to the other two, and how rangy he is, and just different. So it's fun. It's fun to watch those three play the game for sure.
Books. The New Jersey Devils game, the Canucks obviously, you know, got trounced. But they also, you know, I think were a little bit outclassed, even if they managed to force overtime by the Carolina Hurricanes, who were able to hit them with speed. And then, although they were able to win the game, I think some of the seams showed against the Sharks even, who, you know, not the fastest club, not the most dynamic rush attacking team, but even they came at the Canucks off the rush. And even in the opening 10 minutes against Anaheim, you know, Greg Cronin has them playing as conservatively as anybody in hockey as he tries to teach a younger group, I think, some defensive fundamentals. Like, even they were attacking the Canucks off the rush. Now, having seen Anaheim depart from how they usually play to try and hit the Canucks with sort of vertical speed through the neutral zone, I'm beginning to wonder if there's a thing here. Like, is this something that the Canucks are going to have to live with until they can show they can handle it?
Yeah, there's some curious things that stand out for me if I'm pre-scouting the Vancouver Canucks. And you're onto something here because, so Carolina, they're on a heater, right? I think they're 8 in a row right now or something like that. And so they were getting sort of, New Jersey was okay on the road trip, but they were really good in Vancouver. And those are really two quality teams. I don't know if Carolina is going to be, you know, the Carolina we thought they should have been in the past. Not sure, but they look great right now, mm-hmm. obviously New Jersey. So those are two high-octane tests, and then the next two are resets. And so when you start explaining it to me or describing it the way you just described, yeah, absolutely. It's something you have to be aware of. It's something, because those are two teams. Like San Jose, not only on any given night are they not really a transition threat type of – you don't know really what you're going to get out of that group. They're rebuilding. It's kind of a mixed bag. But you're right. There was moments in the game, the starts, where the Canucks looked just okay, just average, pretty pedestrian compared to their best, I would suggest. But they weathered the storm. I think they got the best of San Jose. That's probably the best version of San Jose. Obviously, Granlund ties it late, you know, and Suter does what he does for the Canucks. But it was good to see that they weathered it. It was good to see that they got through the Anaheim game with a pretty sound thumping. They got to come out of the LA game the same way, because – Those are anomalies, those games. Those are reset games is how I like to look at it. There are a couple of things that stand out when you look at the underlying numbers of the Vancouver Canucks. Like, they're one of the leading teams in the entire NHL, like top 15% in offensive zone time and defensive zone time. So that means that they're in the offensive zone way more than they are defensively. And when you then take a look at what you're describing and those chances that you give up against if a team does track against you, considering you're not in your zone a lot, like compared to your competitors, we got to buckle up. We got to figure out a way not to give up some of those chances and be the best version of ourselves when it becomes a track meet. Because honestly, we don't spend a lot of time in our zone because we've got guys in the back end like Hughes who get the puck, they move it up quick. And then we got some weight up front too that can work the wall and do different things. So yeah, these are nice problems to have. I know that sounds crazy, but it's always good when you can identify, okay, let's work on this. Where I keep going back to it a couple of years ago, there were so many things, Drancer, you and I would talk about in a phone call. It's like, where are we going to start? Where do you want to work on? You know, now we can single out the different things, and that's actually a good news thing.
Yeah, there's just a couple areas where, you know, I think their defensive play in zone is a little bit softer this year than it was, although, man, they were good in that area of the game against Anaheim last night. And it just feels like they don't have the speed, in my view. This is my view of it, okay? Mm-hmm. My theory would be this team is trying to loosen things up and play with a little more of a green light in terms of generating offense, but I don't know if they have the speed to consistently cover up for the inevitable sort of errors or just things that go against you. And I'm specifically meaning back end speed to cover up for sort of the errors that are going to happen when you're trying to turn the dial toward, you know, attacking a little bit more loosely as a group. Like that's sort of my global observation of sort of what we've seen from the Canucks through their first 11 games. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that that's fair. You know, they do get away with it on the margins, you know, because you are getting, when Branson's in the lineup, you're getting the best version of him. And it's not like he's slow. It's where you turn over pucks and where it's where the opponent can generate something coming out of their zone in terms of speed, width, or if they're just going length. So in the league, as you know, some teams go east-west off the rush. They're more of a calculating, you know, it's like there's not a lot of teams like this anymore, but there are a few that'll play chess with you a little. LA, they generally in the past have done a lot of that, right? They kind of slow build it. They're not really that super quick strike group because they've been really conservative in the past. But when you get against the track meet type teams, yeah, you can get exposed because if you don't establish full control in the right areas of the offensive zone, or if you're on the wrong side of it in the neutral zone, if you turn it over, then yeah, quick strike against. And like Tyler Myers is 34, you know, he's got length, but you know, he's not getting faster. He is what he is right now. And Vinny Desharnais, you know, again, he's got length, but he is what he is. And Susie's been, you know, just okay to start the year. We're 11 in, and I don't think he's played his best game yet, but you know, you get into the other guys, Hironic and Hughes, and they are what they are. So, yeah, it's a little bit different. But up front, I will say this, that it's surprising to me, to the naked eye, I feel like the Canucks play faster than maybe they ever have up front. For me, that, like, to the naked eye, that's how I look at it. Like, when you bring in Sherwood and you know what you're getting out of him, Miller is super fast. Like, I feel like they play really quick in the middle of their lineup, and then their skill guys are what they are. So, yeah, I guess it's a feeling out process. Pick your poison, Drancer. It's the cap world. You're going to have these little mini holes in your lineup or mini challenges throughout the course of the year, right till the end of June if you want to hoist the cup.
How difficult do you expect it to be for teams to upgrade their defense over the course of the season?
Well, I think it's always difficult to do it. You always have to look at your asset management, your draft capital, and then, of course, where you are spending-wise. It's The league is so tight. There's so little room for error. Vancouver's going to be fine. But if you look at the Atlantic Division, for an example, okay, and you start taking a look at the Boston Bruins and the, Boston, Buffalo, Detroit, Ottawa, Tampa Bay, depending on the night. Like, when you get bunched up like that and there's potential for it to be relatively bunched up for a long period of time, it's so hard to acquire players, and that's just in one division, but it's really hard. And there's some bias in the league too. There's some GMs in the league. They're not going to give you, you know, something to assist you. They'd rather give you an anchor when you need something. So it's hard to do it. And that's why people will always say at the trade deadline or the buildup, well, you overpaid for this or you overpaid for that. But that's because every year, depending on where the market's at, if people need defensemen, the market gets set so high. And especially if you can have a two-way right shot guy who can be on at least your second penalty kill, match up on the road in your top four, things like that, oh boy, they cost a lot of assets.
Yeah, the Liljegren trade to me is still sticking out to me as a, like, canary in the coal mine for just how wild this market could be, Books, because I think because he's a name, right, and he's still young, people think like, oh, man, they got, you know, it's third and a sixth, that's nothing. But a third and a sixth for a guy who hasn't been able to stay in the lineup in the playoffs with any regularity during his time in Toronto, right? He's not a big scorer. He's not a big hitter. He's not a power play guy. He's not a PK1 guy either. $3 million this year and next, wasn't playing in the lineup, and he's a UFA on expiry. So it's not even like there's, you know, a lot of upside or team control coming your way. And that guy gets you multiple draft picks. I mean, to me, that's, you know, we saw like the Canucks acquire Ethan Bear 2 years ago or whatever. And it was, you know, a fifth round pick and they took on Lane Peterson's contract. Like, that's what the market for like reclamation project 4 or 5 guy was 2 years ago. Now it's a third and a sixth. That's a massive change. And if that's what this is going to look like, Books, I think these prices could get batty over the course of this season.
It's a fair observation. The money is what really sticks out to me there on top of everything else. Obviously, when you're the Toronto Maple Leafs, or any team for that matter, when you look at your draft grid and it's relatively bare for a variety of reasons, any type of draft capital that you can recoup in a transaction like that is, it's value. It gives you more opportunities to add to your depth pool, or potentially, you know, move the third out as a kind of an extra in a deal come towards a trade deadline. You always see that, right? That the first and the third, or the second and the third, et cetera, et cetera. But the $3 million, especially for that to move off the books, that's like acquiring another player. They're going to obviously have Hawk and Paw, and they have some decisions to make, no doubt. But here's the thing, Drancer, that's a depressed, I would argue that that depressed value. You got a third and a sixth, which is like, why you got a third and a sixth? But he held on to that asset for 7 years. And, you know, it's kind of like the Robertson kid. I don't know this is a Vancouver show. I don't want to go off the rails here, but it's the timing, isn't it? You know, like you got it. His value was at an all-time low, even to get a third and a sixth. So when you presented to me that, wow, they got a third and a sixth, you're absolutely bang on, because I don't know that his value could have been any lower at that time.
Right.
So that's fascinating.
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely a moment where if you'd eaten the Liljegren, if you'd traded Liljegren, right, you would have gotten a haul. But that moment is long since passed. You're right. Tom Volander playing huge minutes now at BU and scoring a lot. I know it's been an ongoing conversation, but are you seeing growth in his offensive game?
So you and I are going to agree to disagree here a little bit. What gives Tom Volander an opportunity to do the things he does well offensively? His boots, right? Like he's an yep. elite skater. Like he's
special.
He can get to space. Yeah, he's a special skater. And so when he corrals the biscuit on the offensive blue line and, you know, does the things that he does, it's because his feet get him into open space to do things. I don't necessarily think he has elite puck touch. I know you definitely don't think that. You think that it's like a secondary thing. But the funny thing is that if you can get places to create space, your touch with the puck doesn't have to be superior. And bear with me for a second here. You're not going to be contested as much, right? Because they're chasing you, where you're not making plays in small areas necessarily to be the guy and then hit the rush with your legs if you're a transitional defenseman. Where it will break down for him and where it does have to get more crisp is on your first look. So if he's getting contested off a forecheck or coming on his weak side and he's got to reverse it or he's got to wheel it and he's going to make an outlet, he's got to make sure that it's tape the tape hard and he keeps his feet going and whatever. So his puck touch, his execution, yeah, there's still some growth there. But his offense, he creates it with his legs. His mind is fine. I think he sees it fine. I have no issues there. His compete is good for me as well. So, yeah, I'd say it's average plus his natural puck touch. But because he gets everywhere as fast as he does, it opens up better opportunities for him to do less with the puck for bigger results.
Lekker Mäki in the American League so far, Books, I mean, he didn't look ready when he got that cup of coffee last spring, but he's come in point per game, 4 goals across his first 6 AHL games, 34 shots in 6 American League games to start this season.
He's ripping it from everywhere.
I mean, that's we're talking like Anthony Greco stuff here, Books. This guy.
Nobody knows what you just did.
I know, but you know exactly what I mean. The five shots a game plus for a 20-year-old forward here, Books, in these AHL games. I mean, is he too good for this level? Like, that's ludicrous.
Well, his hockey IQ and his ability to find two things. He's got that ability, especially when he slides on his weak side, to find quiet ice, right? Mm. Like, did you see the goal he scored? I broke down some tape. As a power play goal, I'm pretty sure it was Ratu that passed it over to him across the seam the other day, and he absolutely ripped it in the back of the net. Like, there was no chance for the Gulls goalie, I believe it was, on my clip, to make the save. So yeah, he's not too good for it. He's got some growth there, but boy, oh boy, he looks really comfortable. And he's got to be front of mind for them, especially if, like, obviously he would help a power play. I think you and I would both agree with that, especially if you're feeling it and you're confident and you do what he's doing. But no need to rush it. But at the same time, I'm enthusiastic. I'm excited about it. He's playing to his identity, Drancer, and as long as he's average to average plus defensively and he does the things that he's doing offensively to his element, it's a good news story. But you're never too good for any level because you're always going to have an off day and somebody's going to kick you down a notch. So I like his pursuit, though. He's getting after it. He's trying to lean on people a little bit, and then he's ripping pucks. So get on him.
Books, thank you very much. We'll do this again next week with Jamie Dodd back from his mysterious illness. But thank you, man. Always a pleasure.
Anybody wants to look up Anthony Greco video, you'll see what Drance was talking about. He runs around all over the place, but nothing really gets done. Great one out of the archives there, Bob.
Thanks,
I'll
buddy.
Talk to you next week.
Thanks. Cheers. That's Jason Bukala from Sportsnet. Longtime amateur scout, including the director of amateur scouting with the Florida Panthers. We'll be back. We're going to open the whiteboard in the final segment of today's show. You're listening to Canucks Talk on Sportsnet 650.